All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Lamed Hey Amud Bet, 10 lines up, the last word on the line, Meitevei. The Gemara is discussing the machloke between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish with regards to Chalitza and Yibum with a Meuberet. Obviously, if the woman gives birth in the end to a Vlad Shel Kayama, to a child, then there's no question that the Yibum and the Chalitza were meaningless because she wasn't a balat yibum or yivama because she was giving birth to a child, and therefore there's no reason to perform yibum or chalitza here. The question comes up if she is mapelet, if she miscarries, or if the child is not a bar kayama, then did this yibum or chalitza have effect? Until this point in time, we've assumed Rabbi Yochanan says that the chalitzat miuberet and biat miuberet, meaning yibum with the miuberet, is successful, even though she's pregnant at that time, because Lemafreya, retroactively, we realized the pregnancy was not going to be a successful pregnancy, and therefore whatever he did before was meaningful. Reish Lakish says, at the time she's pregnant. At the time she's pregnant, there's no way you can act at that time. You have to wait until it's clear what the situation is, and then you can act. So now the Gemara asks, Meitevei, Hakonei sitivimto, benimtzeit miuberet. So he performed Yibum with this woman, and then figures out or finds out that she is pregnant. Harezu lotina se tsarata. Harezu means a third party. A third party may not marry the co-wife. Shemihei vlad ben kayama. Because maybe the child will be a viable child. When it says, wait a minute, what do you mean a viable child? If it's a viable child, there's no need for yibum here. The co-wife is released without anything. So why? That's not, can't be the reason. So adaraba, kevlad ben kayama, miftara tsarata. If she has a viable baby, then the co-wife is released without anything. Ela ema, Shema lo yehei la vlad ben kayama. He meant that statement to say maybe she will not have a viable child. If that's the case, then she would require chalitza, or at least her co-wife would require chalitza beforehand. V'isa gadatcha bia muberet shma bia. If you think that the bia here accomplishes what you need, amai lo tina se tzarata. Why can't the co-wife be released by that? Tipater bi asho chavrata. She should be released by the yibum of her co-wife. Mimonav shach. She should be okay. If when the baby's born in the end, then it was a viable baby, then she was released because of the viability of the baby. If the baby is not viable, she should be released by the yibum of her co-wife that was performed over here. So, Amar Abaye, so that's a problem for Rabbi Yochanan Shita, who says that biat or yibum takes place even when you're pregnant. So, Amar Abaye, biya kuliyama lo plige to lo patra. Ki plige bechalitza. So now we've amended the machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish that everybody agrees, including Rabbi Yochanan, that when it comes to bia, you cannot have a successful yibum unless it's done when she's not pregnant. But the question is regarding chalitza. Rabbi Yochanan savar chalitzat muberet shma chalitza, biat muberet lo shma bia. So the way that Abaye suggests now is that Rabbi Yochanan believes chalitza can take place while she's a muberet, but bia cannot take place. The yibum cannot take place. But then, Reish Lakish savar biat miuberet lo shma bia, v'chalitza miuberet lo shma chalitza. That both of them do not work while you are pregnant. So Amar Lei Rava, Manav Shach. Rava says, I don't understand your logic about it. I biat miuberet shma bia, chalitza miuberet shma chalitza. V biat miuberet lo shma bia, chalitza miuberet nami lo shma chalitza. They go hand in hand. You can't have it that yibum works, chalitza doesn't, or chalitza works, the yibum doesn't. Why die gaimalon? The cholola, the yibum, ola the chalitza. Any woman who's available for yibum is available for chalitza. They are, as we've said many times, they're two sides of the same coin. So if one works, the other one works. If one doesn't work, then the other one doesn't work either. You can't have it that you have a half of it working, half of it not working. Chol shein ala the yibum, eno ola the chalitza. And the same thing in reverse. If she can perform yibum, she can perform chalitza. She can't perform yibum, she can't perform chalitza. So that can't be the explanation of the machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Ella amar Rav Achi kamar. You have to amend that brayta, so that's not a problem. Which is hakonei yibimto v'nimtzeit miuberet. He marries this woman, he performs yibum with her, and then finds that she's pregnant. Harizu lo tinase tzara ta. A third party may not marry the co-wife. Shemehei vlad ben kayama, because maybe the child that is in utero now might be a viable child in the end. And then, wait, what's the problem then? Ah, here's the problem. Biat muberet lo shma biat. V'chalitza muberet lo shma chalitza. Because a bia b'muberet is not considered a bia. V'achalitzad muberet lo shma chalitza. V'avlad enu puter ad sheyetze lavir ha'ulam. Because the problem is that the child will only be supportive of the situation once it's born. Until it's born, there is no release over here. So the problem is, on one side, if he has bia or chalitza with a mi'uberet, even according to Rabbi Yochanan, if the child turns out to be viable, then the chalitza and the ibum were meaningless at that time. As far as the child making them patur, the child only does or releases the ibum once it's born. While it's in utero, it doesn't release the ibum. So the problem here is that in one direction it'll work, the other direction it won't work. For instance, for Rabbi Yochanan. According to Rabbi Yochanan, if the child turns out not to be viable, then the ibum and chalitza were already performed and the co-wife was released much earlier on. The problem becomes, if it is a viable pregnancy, then the release doesn't happen until the baby's born. So if the release happens when the baby's born, then if she gets married, the co-wife right now, the marriage didn't take hold because there was no release yet. The release only happened after the baby's born. And that's why you have to differentiate between pregnancy that is successful and an unsuccessful pregnancy. You're right, in an unsuccessful pregnancy, I believe that chalitzat mu'uberet, bi'at mu'uberet works. But in a successful pregnancy, the release only happens once the baby is born. Yeah, the bia and the chalitza were meaningless, but that still doesn't mean that you're released. It means you're only released from the time that the baby's born, not from an earlier period in time. Okay. So that's why we force the co-wife to wait, because we don't know when she's going to be released. Tanya kavelta derova, akones yivimto, v'nimtzeit mi'uberet. We have a brayta that supports Rava's understanding over here, that a person who performs yibum with her yizvivama, then finds that she's pregnant, hayrizu lo tinaset tzarata. The co-wife should not go and marry a third party. Shemihei Vlad ben Kayama. Because maybe it will be a viable birth. Ve'ein bia v'chalitza poteret. Ela Vlad poter. Over there, the bia and the chalitza are not what are functioning, but rather the birth of the child. V'vlad ein potra, she'd say the avir ha'olam. And the Vlad doesn't help you out until he is born. So in that case, you have to wait. Not because it doesn't work, bia and chalitza during pregnancy. Of course, it doesn't work when the child is viable, but when it doesn't work, you have another problem, which is that you're not released until the child's born. If pregnancy was not viable in the end, then you're right, the bia and the chalitza would have succeeded at the time that they were done. Taimo de shemehei vlad ben kayamahu. So now, based on the bright, there would be midayek. It's because maybe it will be a vlad shel kayama. Ha lo avi vlad shel ben kayama. If it was not a viable baby, miftar tzarata. Then, Enoch and Ami, it would have worked. The bia and chalitza, that's very supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's position. Let us say this is a strong refutation of Reish Lakish's position, because Reish Lakish says, no, it doesn't work during that period of time. So, I'm going to call Reish Lakish, hachiktani. This is where Reish Lakish says, no, you misunderstood it. Hakonei sivimto, v'nimtzeit mi'uberet, harzeh lo tinaseh tzarata, shema lo yehei avlad ben kayama. So he amends it the other way, that maybe it won't be a viable baby. Chalitzat mi'uberet, lo shma chalitza, ubiat mi'uberet, lo shma bia. Because you were unsuccessful at performing ibum and chalitza until that point, because she was pregnant. Until the pregnancy is terminated, there is no way to have chalitza and ibum take place. If that's the case, she's not released. So mimanav shach, she's not released. Either because if the baby is viable, that's what happens when the baby's born, and if the baby's not viable, then the chalitza and yibum have to wait until you know for certain that it's not viable, until after the miscarriage or the baby's not viable. V'im tomar alech achar rov nashim. Why don't we just go after the majority of women? V'rov nashim v'lad ma'alya yaldan. So then, why don't you just say, let's go after the rov. The rov is that most women who are pregnant bring a full-term pregnancy and have a viable baby. So based on that, it should be that there's no question here. I said, Vlad Shein Upoter, I should say that Bir Olam. That's exactly what the problem is. You're right. Even if we follow the rove doesn't help you over here, because if the baby is viable and the pregnancy goes to full term and the baby's born, everything's fine, that doesn't help you because that won't release you until the baby is born. So for that reason, you have to wait. The co-wife has to wait because in Miman of Shach, both according to Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish here, you're going to have to wait. According to Reish Lakish, you have to wait Miman of Shach because the yibum and the chalitza with a pregnant woman don't work, even if the baby is not viable. Number two is, if the baby is viable, that only helps you once it's born. So for Reish Lakish, either way, you have to wait until the baby's born or miscarried, until the pregnancy is terminated. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yochanan, in one direction, it's a problem. If the baby's born and viable, then that release only happens when it's born. If the baby is miscarried or something happened that it's non-viable, then you're right, the bia and the chalitza would help you. But you still have a safek, so the co-wife can't go out and get married because if it turns out to be a viable baby, she wasn't released yet. Either way, you're going to have to wait, but for Reish Lakish, it's no matter what, you're going to have to wait that way. For Rabbi Yochanan, it depends on the outcome of the situation. According to Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, you have to wait. But they're both trying to explain the Braita, but Reish Lakish needs to explain the Braita in a manner that won't result in being a question to his position. Because the way the Braita is set up now, it seemingly supports Rabbi Yochanan, which is, only because it's a viable baby, do we have to wait. Had it not been a viable baby, you wouldn't have had to wait. That implies that the bia and chalitza were done earlier, we're fine. So Reish Lakish has to change the wording of the Braita, to flip the wording in the Braita in order to make it support his position, which is it doesn't work either way. So now, Amar Rav Elazar, Efshar ita lahad Reish Lakish, velo tananla b'matnidin, says, is it possible that Reish Lakish's position is here, and we can't find support in a Mishnah, that there's a Mishnah that tells us Reish Lakish's position? So nafak dak vashkach. He took, spent time going through all the Mishnayot, and he found something that was supportive of Reish Lakish's position. Titanan, for Mishnah, further on the Masechta, Isha shalach bala v'tzarata l'mindinat hayam. A woman who, her husband and the co-wife, went off overseas. Ubao ba'amru la meit balich. And then they come back and tell her, your husband passed away. Harizu lo tinasei v'lo titiabeim. She can't get married, and she can't perform yibum. Ad sheteida sheme mi'uberet hi tzarata. Until she finds out whether the co-wife is pregnant at that time. So now the Gemara says, Bishlama yivume lo shemehe vlad ben kayama. Now listen, of course she can't perform yibum here, because if it turns out that the baby is a viable baby, v'yifka b'yisra yishrach, the oraita. Because then you're playing with fire. Because if the baby is a viable baby, then she cannot perform yibum. And performing yibum is an isra erva, that's a serious issue. It's a chiyub karet. Ela lo tachlots amai. Why can't you perform chalitza over here? Okay, I understand why she can't perform chalitza within the 9 months and then get married in the 9 months, because haino safek. That's a question about whether it's a viable baby or not. If the viable baby, then she still has to wait till after the baby is born. The chalitza doesn't give her permission or does not release her. So that suggestion is not going to work if you do the chalitza before the 9 month period's up and you don't wait and you get married right away. That can't work because you need to wait. That's the exact safek that we have here. Is there a baby or no baby? And if there is a baby, then we have to wait until 9 months to be certain either it's born, which would release her, or perform chalitza at that point. So that I agree with. Ella, tachlos v'tok tisha, v'tinaseh l'achar tisha. According to Rabbi Yochanan, let him perform chalitza before the 9 months are up. And then after the 9 months, he'll get married to her, mimon of shach. Because either the chalitza worked, or the baby's born. Either one of them would release her at this point in time. Why doesn't the Mishnah make that suggestion? Do chalitza now, and then wait the 9 months out, and then she can get married, mimon of shach. Says, v'tameich. Wait a minute, what type of proof is this? V'tachlots v'tinaseh l'achar tet. Why does the Mishnah say, oh, she has to wait and check it out and find out? Even according to you, Reish Lakish, you agree that after 9 months, Chalitza or the birth of the baby would release her. Why doesn't the Mishnah give that suggestion? You're right, for Rabbi Yochanan it's a problem, she should have done the Chalitza earlier, and then at 9 months, just, yes, I'm good either way. But you, according to you, Reish Lakish, the same thing is true. After 9 months, at the point that then she's either no longer pregnant or there's a baby. So Chalitza should work then, or the baby's born. Either way, she should be released. So where it says, Ela bar mina dahahi. That's excluding that case. The Abaye bar Abba, Verbchenina bar Abaye. Here, if you look on the side, they change both of them to read Abaye bar Avin and Rabchenina bar Avin. They're the brothers. The Amrei Tarvayu, Shemeyehe Vlad ben Kayama, Benimtza Atam Matzricha Kruz Likuna. Why don't we do that? Because if there is a viable baby here, then she didn't need Chalitza. And since she didn't need chalitza and you performed chalitza, people were there at the time of the chalitza are going to say this woman is psula de kuhuna. Then if you let her marry a kohen, people are going to get the wrong impression. They're going to think that a chalitza is muteret to a kohen. Even though we know now she didn't need the chalitza, but that everybody else knows that. So when it says, l'tarcha. So, okay, what's the issue? Make an announcement. Get on the public address system and tell everybody that she didn't need chalitza. That's why she's getting married. Because how do you know that you captured the people? Everybody was there with the chalitza, you captured them with the achraza. Some people might have been there during the chalitza, not known about the latter information. If that's the case, the maymarka shari chalutza the kohen, they're going to come to think that a chalutza is shari the kohen. Rabbi Elazar was trying to bring a proof from that mishnah to the position of Reish Lakish to show you that chalitza within the 9-month period where she could have been pregnant doesn't work, and that's why the mishnah doesn't make that suggestion. The Gemara turned it and said, wait a minute, according to you, Reish Lakish, why is this a proof? For you as well, after the 9-month period, you should be able to do chalitza, and everything would be fine. Why does the mission not allow for chalitza here at all? Why is that an option? Okay, I understand you're asking Rabbi Yochanan, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it should be an option through the whole pregnancy. But even for you, after the 9 months, that should have been an option. Why does she have to wait to find out that it's a viable baby? So the answer to that question is because if we allow chalitza to take place here and find out in the end that there really was a baby, then we're going to have a problem because she'll go married to a kohen, and she didn't need chalitza, and people are going to think, oh, a chalutza can marry a kohen. So we don't want that happening. That's why we don't allow her to use this out of chalitza. But for the same reason, it won't be a question of Rabbi Yochanan, because whatever solution Reish Lakish is giving to his problem with the Mishnah, that solution could be also for Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore this Mishnah is no longer necessarily supportive of Reish Lakish's position. You should just know that the Girsun, the Gemara here, the way we read the Gemara here is that it's betoch tet, Bitina say betoch tet, that the trigger or the threshold is 9 months. The Girsun, the old Sfarim, was 3 months. Was the Girsun there? Rashi says he doesn't understand the Girsun. Tosafot supports him and says he doesn't know what the Girsun meant. With 3 months, it doesn't make any sense. Because even Rabbi Yochanan agrees, before 3 months, you can't do chalitza, because the Mishnah says you're not allowed to get married within the 3-month period. So it doesn't matter. Chalitza is certainly not a choice within that 3-month period. So that's not a question. The only question would be after the 3 months, before the 9 months. And so therefore they both changed the gears here to read 9 months as the threshold, not 3 months, because otherwise the Gemara is very hard to understand. Amar le Abaye, mide lo tachlots velo titya beim tani? Wait a minute. What does it say here? It doesn't say lo tachlots velo titya beim. It doesn't say she can't perform chalitza, she can't perform yibum. Lo tinasei velo titya beim tani. The only thing it says here that she can't do is get married or perform yibum. This is the co-wife that remained behind. The Mishnah there says that she may not perform yibum, understandably, because maybe there's no need for yibum over here. Lo tinasei means she can't marry out to a third party. What it does not say here is chalitza lo tani. Lo tinasei velo titya beim tani. Below chalitza. Avali chalitzla hachanami disharia. It says, I'll tell you what it means, the Mishnah over here, and this wouldn't be a problem at all, which is that you have, the Mishnah just says, do not perform yibum, do not get married. But it doesn't mention the word chalitza. Implied from that statement is, don't perform yibum, and don't get married without chalitza. But if you do chalitza, go ahead and get married. So if that's the case, then you have no explanation of the Mishnah anymore that would be supportive of Reish Lakish, because there and now it seems to indicate that you could perform chalitza. Well, if you could perform chalitza, then for Rabbi Yochanan it can be before the 9 months, and for Reish Lakish it'll be after the 9 months. But again, it's not necessarily supportive of Reish Lakish to the exclusion of Rabbi Yochanan. Right now, Tanya Kavoti de Reish Lakish. Now we have a braita that supports this position, Reish Lakish, which is Acholetz Nemeuberet Vehipila Tzvicha Chalitza Menachim. It's pretty straightforward. That the braita says that if you perform chalitza while she's pregnant, you need another chalitza later. The fact you need another chalitza later tells you that it was not a viable pregnancy in the end. And that means that it's like Reish Lakish. The chalitza that you did when she was pregnant had no impact, and you need to do another chalitza later. That's very supportive of Reish Lakish, which is now going to push us in the direction of paskening like Reish Lakish. Which is Amarova, Hilchato Kavate de Reish Lakish Behanitzlat. The halacha is like Reish Lakish in these three instances. Normally, when we have a machloket Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, halacha ke Rabbi Yochanan. First of all, Rabbi Yochanan is his Rebbe. But in general, we have the halacha like Rabbi Yochanan over Reish Lakish. Here are the three exceptions to that, where halacha is like Reish Lakish. Obviously, this is one of them, and that's why the Gemara is bringing it over here. Tosafot deals with other cases in Shas where we paskin like Reish Lakish against Rabbi Yochanan that are not mentioned in this list. In many of the cases, he'll either say that Reish Lakish is saying this b'shem somebody else. So if Reish Lakish says it in b'shem somebody else, then it's not Reish Lakish versus Rabbi Yochanan. He's giving attribution to his position. That's one. And the other thing is, sometimes Reish Lakish is just explaining someone else's position, but he doesn't necessarily hold like that position. So that's why when we pass in that way, it doesn't mean we're passing like Reish Lakish versus Rabbi Yochanan. But here are the three cases. Chada Hadamran. One of them is our case right here. the case of chalitzat miuberet and biat miuberet, where Rabbi Yochanan says it's fine, and Rish Lakish says it's no good. We pass him like Rish Lakish that it is no good. Idach, the other one is the tnan, amechalek nechasav al piv. Person who is distributing his Yerusha. Riba le'echad umiyet le'echad. Vishva lehem et ha-bechor. Gave more to one brother over another brother. He made the bechor, doesn't give him a double portion. Divarav kayamim. Whatever he does is done. V'yamamar mishum Yerusha lomar klum. If he said it's because of Yerusha, then it doesn't work. He can give away his possessions any way he wants. He can give gifts to whomever he wants. Doesn't even have to be to his children necessarily, but he can give gifts. Over here, where he's giving it derech matana as a gift, he can make the choice of how he's distributing the items. If in his statement he says, I'm giving this as Yerusha, as an inheritance, then it does not work. Now, the way that he's accomplishing this is through a matnat shchiv meira, which is the oral relaying of a deathly ill person's last will and testament, which the Chachamim gave power to it as if it was contracted and had a kinyan associated with it. So even though he is just conveying this orally, it takes on the full force of a proper kinyan, a proper acquisition, because the fact that it's a matnat shchiv meira. The effectiveness of this will only take place after he dies. But since he did a derech matana as a gift, he has a right to gift to whomever he wants. Now, if he uses the word Yerusha, then it becomes a problem. Because if he uses the word Yerusha, he's basically being matna masha katu b'Torah. He's now taking a position against the Torah's position. There we won't allow him to do that. We won't allow him to make a Yerusha work if the Torah says Yerusha works differently. Katav ben b'tchila ben b'sof ben b'ebza mishum matana. If he writes a document, and anywhere in the document he talks about a gift or a kinyan, not Yerusha, then in that case, Dvarav Kayamim, it works. Ve'amar Reish Lakish. Here's a statement of Reish Lakish. Le'olam lo kana ad shumar ploni uploni yashu sadeh ploni uplonit shin netatim lahem b'matana v'yarshum. So he says that it won't work, the kinyan, until he says, ploni uploni yashu sadeh ploni uplonit, so-and-so will be yoresh this field. So-and-so will be yoresh this field. Shin netatim lahem b'matana. That I gave it to them in a gift. V'yarshum. And then they'll inherit it. So there you have Rish Lakish's qualification. He's not arguing on the Mishnah, obviously. Rish Lakish is an Amora. He's not going to be arguing on the Mishnah. So he's qualifying the Mishnah. And that's what, if you look in Rashi, he says, Lo matnitin palig, elahotam v'yishnochlim, pligi amurai, b'diyuka de matnitin. There's a machloka de amuraim, as to what we learn out of the Mishnah. T'chi ataravin amar, yarash ploni sadeh ploni, betina tes sadeh ploni de ploni. What happens if you have a case where the din is bifurcated, where he gave a field to one of the brothers, and he was morish to another? He says, you're going to be yoresh, and yours is a gift. So then, how does that work? So, Ryokan Amar Kana, Afale Hai Dirusha, that he says, even the one who used the word Yerusha for, he is Konen. Dime Adkar Lashon Matana, Bahishtar Tzava, Lachad Minayu. So since he mentioned Matana with regards to one of the children in that shtar, Kuluhu nami matananu, that basically covers everybody. So as long as he has five sons, to four of the sons he says, you're going to be yoresh, and to the fifth son he says, I'm giving it to you b'matana. That matana to the fifth son makes it that all the others are fine too, because that makes the whole thing a matana. Rish Lakish amar, lo'olam lo kana, how do Yerusha? No, the one who he says about Yerusha doesn't work. The one he says matana does work. And that's what he says here. The only time that it'll work that matana overturns the whole thing is like here, where he says, ploni, ploni, yeshu, stay, ploni, ploni, so-and-so will inherit this and this field, and then shinatatim lahem, that I gave to them. Because the natatim lahem then reverses both of the previous statements of Yerusha to both the parties over here, and the lashon matana goes back on both of them. But if the lashon matana is only with regards to one of them, and Yerusha with the other, that doesn't cover the party that he used lashon Yerusha. So again, machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, paskin like Reish Lakish, that the word matana only saves you if it references anybody who the word Yerusha was used with. But just because the word matana is mentioned by one of them does not capture or help the others out. That's the shita Rabbi Yochanan, and we don't paskin that way. V'idach, the third case, titnan, kotev kone chasav libno la'achar moto. A person says, all my possessions are going to my son after I die. Av eni yocholim kor. The father cannot sell it, mipnei shenatnan leben, because he already gave him to the child. V'aben eino yachodim kor, And the son can't sell them, if neishem b'rshut ha'av, because they're in the possession of the av. Here, he uses lashon mi'ayom ole'achar mita, from today until the point I die. It's not going to take effect right now, the gift. The gift is from now till the time I die, but basically means gets executed once I die. Now I'm giving away the gifts, that way I'm alive when I'm giving away, else he can't give away things when he's dead, so he has to give it away when he's alive. So the kinyan and everything that takes place will happen now. The effectiveness of this will only take place after he dies. So basically what he did now is he gave his son rights to the property today, meaning that the kinyan's done today, but it won't be effective until he dies. So in the interim, the father basically becomes a leaseholder on the property. The underlying property now belongs to the son, but the father gets the production of the field. So he has the leasehold rights in the field. He just doesn't own the field anymore. So the son can't sell it because there's an encumbrance of the production of the property to his father. So he can't sell it. On the other hand, the father can't sell it because it's really owned by the son. If the father sells it, it's sold until his death. Because that's what he has. He has a leasehold right. He can sell whatever rights he has in the field. So he sells them now. They'll revert to the son when he dies. Machara ben. If the son sells it, and the lokeach klom achimotav, then the lokeach gets nothing until the father passes away. Because the son can only sell the rights that he has. The rights that he have only come into effect once the father dies. Right. He basically is, exactly. That's what it is here. It's an option because of the next scenario. Vitmar. Machara ben bechayav. Umeita ben bechayav. What happens in that scenario? The son sells it during the father's lifetime. Now we said that the lokeach only gets those rights when the father passes away. But here the son predeceased the father. So now the son predeceased the father. The son lost all the rights to the property at this point in time because the father never passed away. So what happens to his rights over here? Rabbi Yochanan amar lokana lokeach. So Rabbi Yochanan says the lokeach is out. That's it. The buyer lost. It's basically an option. He bought an option. That in the case where the father predeceases the son, which is the normal scenario, he will get the property. But in the unusual circumstance where the son predeceases the father, then he gets nothing. It's almost like buying an insurance policy against a life of the father. Meaning that if the father dies, then he's going to get paid out. If the father doesn't die, he's not going to get paid out over here. So Reish Lakish Amar Kanalokeach. Reish Lakish says that the sale goes through. Now, the reason for this is Rabbi Yochanan Amar Lo Kana Lokeach, because Kinyan Periot Kinyan Aguf Dami. When you have a leasehold in a property, it's as if you own the underlying property. This machloket also has implications as far as Bikurim are concerned. If you can only bring up Bikurim if you own the land from which the Bikurim came from. So if you are leasing somebody's property and you're growing fruits on that property, can you bring up those Bikurim? That will be dependent exactly on this machloket. Is a Kinyan Periot, is a leasehold in the property considered to be as if you own the property? If yes, then you can bring up the Bikurim to the Mikdash because it's your property and your fruits. Now then, if you believe not, then you have the fruits, but it's not your property. You can't say that I'm bringing these and this is the land that God gave me because you don't have the land. You only have a leasehold in the land. But it also has ramifications here, which is that Reish Lakish says, Kana Lokeach is Kinyan Periot, Lav Kinyan Aguf Dami. It has implications in our case because what type of right does the father have in the land now? So if we say that the father has a kinyan aguf in the property, it means that his leasehold on the property means that he has such a strong hold over the land, that means when the son dies, basically he reacquires the land because it was his all along. He never really gave up ownership of the property. So now when the son died, there's nothing to talk about because he had the ownership and he never gave it up. On the other hand, if you think that all he has here is a leasehold and the property is really owned by the son, then the son sold his rights to this lokeach. And when the father finally passes away, that lokeach will get the rights of the son because the father doesn't own the underlying property. So that leasehold makes a difference. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, the father's leasehold in the property is so strong that if the son predeceases him, he basically gets it back. He basically reacquires the whole property. On the other hand, Reish Lakish believes that he only has a kinyan peirot. He has a leasehold. He does not have ownership. Since he doesn't have an ownership, that ownership was with his son. And his son sold that right to someone else. And therefore, when the father dies, that will just pass to the buyer. The buyer owns the underlying property, just he has to wait for it to take effect when the father dies. And that's why the lokeach, the sale, went through in that case. Now, Rabbi Yochanan is going to have to agree in a case where the father predeceases the son that the sale went through. Because even though he says here that it's a kinyan aguf in the karka, the leasehold of the father is so strong then it's as if he owns the property. If that's the case, then why does the son's sale work at all? So the answer is that he doesn't think it's that strong. He thinks it's strong enough that if we get the son out of the picture, that the father reacquires the property. But if the son is still around, the son sells his rights in the property to the lokeach. What were his rights? That when the father passed away, he would get it. So those rights are passed to the buyer, and the buyer can have that option there as well. All right, so now that was the third case where we passed on like Reish Lakish, and not like Rabbi Yochanan, the sale is a good sale, because Kinyan HaPeirot, Lav, Kinyan HaGuf, Domi. Right now we move on to the next piece of the Mishnah. Ein Blad Shel Kayama. Tana Mishum Eliezer Amru Yotzi Beget. So Rabbi Eliezer here is talking about the last statement in the Mishnah. That's why it says Bechula here in the header. Which is, the last statement is that if it's a Blad She'eno Kayama, if it's not a viable baby, then Yikayim. Then he can keep this woman. On that, Rabbi Eliezer says, no, Yotzi. He has to divorce her with a get. And the reason he has to divorce her with a get is because he violated a safek doraita. He shouldn't have married this woman until he was certain about what the outcome of the baby was. And here, when he married her, when he didn't know, he was in a safek isu doraita. We're going to penalize him. There's a knas chachamim here that he has to divorce her. And that's what Rabbi Eliezer says over here. Tana mishum Rabbi Eliezer amru yotzi beget. In that scenario where it's not a vlad shakayama, it's not a viable baby, and the yibum could have gone through, nevertheless, he has to divorce her because he put himself into a safek doraita. So now, amarava, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Eliezer amru davar echad. They said one thing. Rabbi Eliezer had Amran. This is what Rabbi Eliezer says. Afo pishen a vlad shel kayama, kansinin le diotzi beget, mishum de nichnas le safek isur eshirach. So if it's a vlad shel kayama, if it is a viable baby, then there's nothing to talk about. If it's a viable baby, there was no need for ibum, there's no need for chalitza. She goes, she's released without anything. There's nothing to do over here. That's one part of it. But what happens if it is a vlad sheino kayama? It's not a viable baby. So then, what do we force him to do? Rabbi Eliezer over here says, Yotzi beget. You have to release her with a get, because this person put himself into a position of safek yisrach. So even though now, l'mafreya, we see that the yibum was good, nevertheless, we put a knas on him, and we say he's got to give her a get. Now, number one is, a get without chalitza works. That's number one. That we don't need chalitza anymore. The yibum that he performed was a good yibum. But number two is we do force him to get a get. So there are two things to focus on over here. One is that because he did something wrong, we're going to force him to divorce the woman. Even though technically now there's nothing wrong. The yibum that he performed was a good yibum. We're going to force him to divorce the woman. And number two is, so he's acknowledging that the yibum was a good yibum. And that's why she only needs a get. But he's saying there's a knas chachamim that says he has to divorce her because he got married too quickly. He performed yibum with a woman that could have been a safek erva. So that's why we're konesim, send her out with a get. This is the way the Rashi explains the Gemara. The obvious issue with that is that the Gemara now is alibid the Rabbi Yochanan, who is alo alibid the Hilchata. We just paskin that the loch is like Reish Lakish. For that reason, many of the Rishonim come up with alternate explanations of this Gemara. Some of the Rishonim say that she requires not only a get, but also chalitza, because we paskin like Reish Lakish. Some suggest that the word that's used here, or the girsa here, is yotziu, without the word beget. And yotziu means that he has to get rid of her, release her. That's with the get and chalitza. But there is no word beget over here. And there are others who suggest that Rashi meant that he only has to release her with a get after he stays with her post the miscarriage, because then there is a consummation of the ibum. And that's when he releases her with a get. It's not in a situation where he only did yibum while she was pregnant. And some say that the issue of get here is just an indication of the fact that lo yachzira olamit, that this is a permanent divorce, not simply a separation for a period of time. Amarova, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Eliezer, Amru Davar Echad. We have a similar idea by Rabbi Meir as what we have here by Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer had Amran, Rabbi Eliezer is what we said now. Rabbi Meir Detanya. Rabbi Meir is from this braita. Lo yisa adam mi'uberet chaviro u'mineket chaviro. Person may not marry a woman who is pregnant or a woman who is nursing. That is because we're afraid that she will become impregnated from the second husband, and that will hurt her milk supply and cause the baby to not be able to survive. In their day, they didn't have formula. They didn't have a way to replace the mother's nursing. So if you have no way to replace the mother's nursing, if she becomes pregnant and that takes away the milk, then you're causing possible risk to the baby that's there. So therefore, she has to wait. If she's nursing or she's pregnant, he can't get married to her until that is complete, until the baby's weaned. Once the baby's weaned, then it's fine.
But if the mother's milk, if
Well, Barrett's going to end up in the same scenario. She's going to eventually give birth and have to nurse this baby for 24 months. If he gets married to her now, she's going to have a baby and have to nurse that baby. So either way, in the end, they end up with a nursing situation. Even though here, we have certainty as who the father is of the baby. In other cases, we say wait 3 months because we want to know who the father is. Over here, we have certainty as who the father is, but we don't want it because of the risk to the baby's life. Vim nasa, if he marries her, yotzi, velo yachziro lomit, divrei Rabbi Meir. He has to divorce her. And he cannot marry her forever. Because he violated the Divrei Chachamim, she's out. Chachamim omrim, yotzi, to get divorced temporarily. He'll wait till the 24 months are up, and then he'll take her. So Amar Abaye, he might. Abaye challenges Rava's understanding here that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Lezer say the same thing. Dilma, Lohi. Maybe they're not saying the same thing. Adkan, Lokama, Rabbi Lezer, Ochal, Mishum, the Pug, Abi, Isra, Eshet, Achto, Raito. In our case over here, when he enters into the world of Safek, he's entering into a world of Safek, Do, Raito. So there, Rabbi Lezer says, out and out forever. You're out of the picture. Divorce. Aval hotam derabonon. Over there, it's only rabonon. Kerabonon severely. And then since it's only a din derabonon, they're not going to punish him so severely. They'll just say, okay, separate or get rid of her until the time that it's allowed to get married. Inami. Adad kom kamar Rabbi Meir hotam elishum derabonon. Or maybe Rabbi Meir over there, the only reason he has this position is because it's a din derabonon. Vechamim asu chizuk ledvarem yoter mishel Torah. And the Chachamim had to back up their position and make it even stronger than the Torah in order to make it hold. Because if they don't back up their position, people are going to ignore the words of the Chachamim. How do they back up their position? They say, if you violate the words of the Chachamim, you're going to have to divorce this woman and never marry her. They are going to separate anyway because it's a din de oraita. So you don't have to give chizuk to that. Say, oh, if you marry her, we're going to force you out forever. No, maybe there we'll say, okay, people don't generally violate isurim de oraita. It's an unusual thing. We don't have to punish in that case. We'll tell you what the din is, but we're not going to punish him forever. So amarobo uledivrei chachamim yotziya beget. The rabbi says, wait, according to the chachamim over here, it says yotzi. Yotzi seems to indicate not that they separate, but rather that they divorce what they get. So Amar Mar Zutra Dekanami, the diuk is correct. Diktani Yotzi Velok Diktani Yafrish. It says that he should divorce her, get rid of her, but not Yafrish, not separate. That means even the Chachamim who say that you just divorce temporarily, say that they have to get divorced, not just separate. Shmamina. So now Amar Rav Ashi the Rav Hoshaya Bray the Ravidi Hotom over there it's not Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer. Kol shesha ba'adam lamed yom enu nefel. Anybody who lives for 30 days is not considered to be a non-viable entity. As soon as you cross over the threshold of 30 days, now here it's talking about Adam, that mission over there also has behema. Behema, the threshold is 8 days. For Adam, it's 30 days. Halo shaha, if he doesn't last after 30 days, then sveka havi, then it is a safek. So we only know with certainty if you cross over the 30-day threshold, Torah Tosafot talks about whether it's on the 30th day or past the 30th day, which is a machloket in general, but let's assume it's past the 30th day. If the baby makes it past the 30th day, there's nothing talking about. This is a viable baby, and there's no discussion anymore in terms of the question of Yibam Chalitza. But if the baby dies within that 30-day period, then we don't know. Was it a Kayama or was it a Log Ben Kayama? This all stems from the fact that we have a safek im kalu lo chadoshav, whether the baby went full term. The Gemara says, if a baby reaches full term, 9 months full term, then we know for sure it's a ben kayama. It doesn't matter if it passes away a day afterwards or 2 days later, it's a ben kayama. That is a viable baby and there's nothing to discuss. The only question becomes when we're not sure if the baby went full term. So since we're uncertain as whether the baby went full term or not, we wait 30 days, and that gives us retroactive information as to whether she went full term or not. So if we wait out the 30 days and the baby is a viable baby, then we know for sure she went full term. So that tells us. So now in the scenario where it happens before the 30 days the baby passes away, we don't have information yet. We weren't sure whether it went full term or not. And because had she gone full term, the baby would have been okay, viable from day one. If she doesn't go full term, we wait 30 days to retroactively tell us that she went full term and it was a viable baby. So over here, where the baby dies within the 30-day period, we're not certain that it wasn't a viable entity. We don't know. We don't have the evidence now to tell us whether she went full term or not. And so that's why it's a safek. V'itmar, meit b'toch lamed yom, v'amda v'nit kadsha. If within 30 days she goes ahead and has kiddushim, ravina mishmei d'rav amar, im eshet Yisrael hi choletzet. If she's an eshet Yisrael, she stays married to her new husband, and does chalitza. Imeshet koheni einachol letzet. If she's an eshet kohen, she can't perform chalitza because that's going to ruin it with her new husband. So in this scenario where the baby dies during that 30-day window, now we don't know whether she needs chalitza or not. We're not sure if the baby was a viable entity or not. So we don't know. So in a case where within that 30-day window, amdavinit kacha, she went ahead and got married to another party thinking that she was released after the baby was born, then if she's married to an Israel, we tell this, go ahead, get chalitza performed with her. That way, mimanav shach, you're okay. Either the baby was kayama and she was released, or chalitza is performed and she's released. Either way, there's no problem over here because now she's released and she can remain with her husband. For a kohen, it becomes a much more difficult situation. Because by the kohen, if we tell her go perform chalitza, she now become a surah to the kohen. So for there we say don't perform chalitza and just let her stay married to the man because we assume rove babies that are born are viable entities. And based on that, we give them a dispensation to stay together even though they acted inappropriately. Both of them have to do chalitza. You're right, at night, that's what Rava said. In the morning, he changed his mind and said that chalitza is only needed by Eshet Yisrael. It's not needed by Eshet Kohen. You were there at night. You only heard Rava's first position. But then in the morning, when he retracted his position, that you weren't there for. But I'm telling you. He goes, you let him go. You were matir. Here at Tzon, that you should also be matir chelev. Now, obviously, he's being sarcastic over here because he's saying, his comment basically is, how are you freeing this woman without chalitza? How is it that you're just saying muteret, when she's married to the Kohen, there is a safek here that she needs chalitza, needs her doraita, at least her lab doraita, marrying a woman who needed chalitza, bashuk, because she could have been up for evil. And you're saying it's mutar. So you say, no, you want to make matter this? Go ahead and make matter chelev also. Another Yisur Doraita. I think that's the comment that he's making. So where it says, wait, hocha gabi mi'uberet chaveiro u'meneket chaveiro. In a case where we had the case of mi'uberet and meneket, and the su'ala kohen, my. What is the story if she's married to a kohen? We said before that in the case where he marries the pregnant wife of his friend, or he marries the nursing wife of his friend, then in that case, we, even according to the Chachamim, we penalize him and say that he has to divorce her in the interim, and then remarry her after that 24-month weaning period is done. But we force him to divorce in the interim. So there, we have a question. Wait a minute. That, by Israel, works. By Israel, if he divorces her and then takes her back, that's fine. By Kohen, if he divorces her in this interim period, he can't take her back afterward. So do we have the same dispensation in that case? Right, over here by the case of chalitza, Rova says there is a dispensation for the Kohen, he doesn't perform chalitza. Do we have that same dispensation by the case of Meuberet and Meineket that we allow the Kohen to not give a divorce in the interim? Mi Avod Rabbanan Takanta the Kohen. Did the Rabbanan protect the Kohen like they did in this case? Olo. Samalei Hachiashto. How can you compare these cases? Bishlam Ahotam. Kaven de Ikira Bonon de Pligi Ale de Rabbi Shimon Gamleo de Amre Afagab de Lo Shlav Lad Ma'al Yahavi. So because over there you have a dissenting opinion that says that against what Rabbi Shimon Gamleo says. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon Gamleo says he has to wait 30 days in order to determine if it's a viable baby. The Chachamim disagree and say that it's a Vlad Ma'al right away. Now here within the position of the Rabbonon that say that any baby is considered to be viable, Rashi and Tosfot actually have the machloket as to what that means. Rashi says, afilu pihek v'meit. Even if he just sneezes and dies, that's enough according to the Chachamim. Tosfot disagrees. He says that even the Rabbanan in that case will say that it's a nefel. But it's a case here where the baby was walking around and fell off the roof, or it was killed by an animal, meaning that there was nothing that gave us indications that there was something wrong with the baby. And there was an exogenous variable that caused the baby to die. In that scenario, the Chachamim say that we consider it a viable entity, even if it doesn't make it to the 30-day window, that 30-day threshold that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel gives. So therefore, Gabi Eshet Kohen, Kevin Dolo Efshar, Abdina Kirabonon. This is why minority opinions are important. Over here, even though we're going to paskin like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Rabbonon's opinion is still there. Since the Rabbonon's opinion is still there, when we get into a Shat HaTchach, we're to Kohen, then we're going to say, don't perform chalitza. We'll rely on the Chachamim's position to allow the Kohen to stay married to this woman, even though there is a safek according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. That's why when the Gemara says,
Beit Shammai b'makom Beit Hillel ain't a Mishnah. When Beit Shammai is in the face of Beit Hillel, it's not a Mishnah. That means that they're not an opinion you can rely on in Shat HaTachak. As opposed to where we have arguing opinions, and then you have a Shat HaTachak, in a Shat HaTachak, the Chachamim can utilize that minority opinion or that other opinion with Tziruf. That's how the Poskim do it. You see the Gemara doing that right now. The Gemara, we pass like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Nevertheless, there is that position of the Chachamim, and that position of the Chachamim has weight in a situation where we need it. And that is in a situation of a Kohen. Of a Hocha, Keman Navid. In our case here, of Me'uberet and Me'neket, there are only two opinions. One opinion is Rabbi Meir, who says you got to get divorced and can't get remarried at all. There's a Chachamim's position, which is get divorced and get remarried later. Whose opinion are you going to rely on? Both of them say you need a divorce. Kira Iker Rabbi Meir, Amar Yotzi B'Loyach Zero Lamit. There's nothing to do. Iker Rabbanan, Amar Yibi Get. So that doesn't work. So that's the difference here. In the case of Yibom and Chalitza, we can protect the Kohen because we have a dissenting opinion who we can rely on. By the case of Meineket and Muberet, there we do not have a dissenting opinion which will let the Kohen rely on that in the Bishat Adchak. Itmar, Kitcha betoch shlosha, ubarach. What happens? Within 3 months, he's Mekadesher and then takes off. So now we know within 3 months he's not allowed to marry this woman. Here we're talking about any almana or grusha over here. Any almana or grusha, he goes ahead and performs kiddushin with her and then takes flight. He leaves. So in that scenario, what is the din? So pligi baravacha v'rafram. Chad amar mishamtinen le. We put him in shamto because he violated the chachamim's words that you're not allowed to get married within the 3 months. You have to leave a 3 month window from the passing of the previous husband to the marriage of the new husband to determine who is the father over here at the baby. So since he violated that, we put him into Shamta. Chadamar, Irukea, Mistayo. His running away helps him here. Because the fact that he ran away shows that he's not going to be Koneser. He's not going to do Nisuin until after the 3 month period. So in terms of upholding the words of the Chachamim, he's not really violating them. Because in the end, yes, he performed Kiddushin, but he's not going to do Nisuin until after that 3 month period. So since he's not going to do it, then we accomplish the same thing in the end, which is, there is no marriage until after 3 months. Even though he had the Erusin or the Kiddushin early, the Nisuin is still delayed, and that's what matters to us. What matters to us is when he is together with her, not the marriage itself, inherently. So Abba Uvda, there was a case like this. Vamar Lahu Rafram, Irukea Mistaya, which seems to indicate, here we didn't know attribution of Rav Achlan Rafram. Here we have a psak by Rav Rafram that says, in a scenario like this, Irukea Mistaya, that the running away is helped him out in this case because there's no nisuin and therefore the whole chashash goes away in that scenario. And since the chashash goes away, we allow them to stay together. We don't put him into shamta. We don't excommunicate him for violating the words of the chachamim. These three gemarot all deal with violations of a takanat chachamim.
So it's not.
And the question is, how do we deal with that violation of the takanat chachamim? In one case, we saw that he has to get divorced, meaning that's the case by Me'uberet u'Me'neket Chaveiro. There it's just a safek sakanat nefashot for the baby. It's only the Rabbanan, but we said before that the Rabbanan asu chizuk l'dvarim yoter mishel Torah in order to protect their position. In the case of Yibam, where that's a doraita violation, there people are more careful, and therefore the Chachamim didn't have to strengthen it. And if they violate it, we tell them, listen, get chalitza done, because that way you're certain. For the Kohen, we let them rely on the minority opinion in that case, even though he violated the words of the Chachamim, because, again, people are not going to copy this individual, because it's an Isur D'oraita, possibly, and therefore they're not going to want to mess around with it. Now, there, it's not Eshet Ach, there's a problem of a Lav D'oraita. Now, where you get to a case where it's Eshet Ach D'oraita, that's a much more serious violation, and there, Rabbi Eliezer says, Yotzi B'Get, he has to give her a get, and that's it, because he violated the words of Chachamim, we're going to penalize him there. By Eshet Ach risk, there we say, out, according to Rabbi Eliezer at least. There's someone who argues, obviously, on Rabbi Eliezer, the Rabbanan argue on Rabbi Eliezer, but it depends. All these scenarios, we're looking at a Takana D'Rabbanan, a violation of that Takana D'Rabbanan, and then what do? How do we ask you to rectify it? So, in the case of, let's say, in the case of Yibum, where you violated Doraita, Rabbi Eliezer says, you're out, she has to get a get, and she's out forever. Whereas, the Chachamim say, just separate for the period of time that you need to until we can figure out what's going on. Then you have the case of Muberet and Meineket. In the case of Muberet and Meineket, there we had, Halacha according to Rabbi Meir, she's out forever, you lose out because you did it. According to the Chachamim, you have to give a get, and then you can remarry once it's okay. That means the Kohen loses out. The Kohen will not be able to remarry, and he's out completely. And there again, it's because it's a din d'rabbanan, we want to be mechazik it. Then there's the third case, which is a case where it's a third party marrying this woman. So there's not an Isur Doraita of Erva, meaning Chiyuv Karet, there's an Isur Lav. So over there, we tell him to get Chalitza done afterwards, just to Mimonavshach be fine in this situation. For a Kohen, who it would hurt his ability to stay married to this woman, we waive that in that case, because of the Shita of the Rabbanon, who say you don't need to do anything. So we're relying on that, the Shita Chachamim, because they say that a baby born even one day is viable. So there, we're not going to penalize him again. It's a Din Doraita. So we're not going to penalize him, and we have a minority opinion to rely on. And then we have this last case here. We're waiting between the death of a husband and the marriage to the new husband. You have to wait 3 months. He does Kiddushin, but not Nisuin. Do we penalize him for it? Machloket, Rav Acha, and Rav Rom. In the end, Rav Rom Paskins that you don't have to wait for it, because the fact that he left town after he did Kiddushin with her shows that he intends to keep the words of Chachamim and only take her as a wife after that 3 month period. He just wanted to lock her in before he left. Because if he doesn't do that, someone else could marry her in the interim, and he wanted to make sure that she wasn't gone. So all these cases are basically cases where there's a takanat chachamim and a violation. How do we deal with that violation? Right? So we're stopping here at the two dots on the top of Lev Mizayin Amud Aleph.